Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with David Bibb, Acting Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us in our conversation is Marty Wagner, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. David, most achievements in government are not solo acts. Certainly some of the best programs are accomplished by teams of employees within the government. Could you elaborate on your approach to empowering your employees? How do you lead change and enable your staff within the organization to accept the inevitability of change and make the most of it?
Well, Albert, there are a variety of methods that I've found to be effective. I do believe in consensus up to a point, and we'll strive for that, not to the point of paralysis, because I've seen that in action too. I think you want to get a lot of people's viewpoint if time permits. Other times, you're going to have to move quickly and say, this is the way it is, and hope you can pick up support along the way. I use a variety of techniques myself as a leader. One is, I've mentioned earlier, the videos. They're a great way to get out to everybody so that they can see you, get a feel for your personality as you have what amounts to a one-on-one. It's not really a conversation, but a talk with the person. And communication itself is vitally important. I've probably said enough about the various working groups we have, but a vital component of each one of those is a communication strategy. And that's a communication strategy both we will talk about our own employees, our own executives across the country, our congressional staffs we deal with, members of Congress, the vendor communities that we deal with. Whenever we're thinking about doing anything of substance, we have to stop and think about each of those communities and how we communicate that change to them. So communication is vital, and that's part of making change happen, being sure everybody's well aware of it and not surprised by it. We also manage very much by performance measures and personal performance plans across GSA, to the point that, and we've gotten much better at having a common set of performance measures. Now, some regions do a few different tasks from other regions, and we allow for that, and the headquarters is a little bit different from the regions, but everybody knows that those performance plans make a difference. The strategic plan is done first, then the performances, organizational plans are done, then the individual plans are done, and people know that their success depends in large part on how well they're carrying out that cascade of things that start at the strategic level.
David, we talk with many of our guests about collaboration. What kinds of partnerships are you developing now to improve operations or outcomes at GSA? And could you also speculate into the future, how may these partnerships change over time?
We have everything from formal partnerships, which are where we, for example, I was asked to come out to Scott Air Force Base to meet with the United States Transportation Command, TRANSCOM, as it's called, headed by a four-star general. The four-star and I hit it off very, very well. Then he paid a visit to our headquarters, and out of that we said, you know, we really have some things in common we can work together on. Why don't we memorialize that and enter into a memorandum of agreement that here's what Defense Logistics Agency will do, here's what GSA will do, here's what the U.S. Transportation Command will do. Let's put that down on paper and we'll all sign it. That's just worked terrifically well. There are other cases where a formal memorandum of understanding or memorandum of agreement is not the way to go. You want a much more informal approach. And we try to do that. I mentioned earlier the customer visits we have, which where I might go visit the secretary of a cabinet-level agency, take along our top leadership team, and they would have theirs. And lots of times the things we talk about basic services. We go in prepared to talk about issues they may have with some of the things we're providing, but we try to open their eyes to some of the things that might help them get their job done better than they're doing it now. And nearly always we come away from that with a new area of business to pursue. It becomes pretty self-evident. We're also working very hard to develop better partnerships with associations that represent our vendor community. We've been active in those for some time, but we want to look for even more opportunities. If there is an association of vendors that have been dealing primarily with Department of Defense, we are making it our business to become a part of that association so that we're part of the conversation. Not to be in competition with defense, because that's not our role, but sometimes there is an area that we can slot in quite nicely that might not be provided, but we need to know the people. So we have a variety of partnership type arrangements, from formal to informal to outreach to making it a conscious decision to be active in various associations.
So David, as we continue to sort of look into the future, can you give us a sense of some of the key issues that will affect GSA and government-wide procurement over the next few years? And how do you envision your office will need to evolve to meet some of these challenges?
I've mentioned a couple of them, some of the key issues. I mentioned the proliferation of contract vehicles. We now have another key issue that we're dealing with right now is how to be sure on you mentioned we had 10,000 contractors. We have a lot of them are on our multiple award schedules. We do $35 to $40 billion worth of sales off those schedules annually. And we want to be sure that the people who are ordering against those schedules are getting the best price. There's been a lot of discussion about whether the clauses we use now to ensure that best price are the most effective clauses that we can possibly have. That's what we want. We're not making change for change's sake. We want a good clause in those multiple award schedule contracts that will ensure the best possible price and value for the customer. So Loretta Doan, our former administrator, established a blue ribbon panel to take a look at that. And it includes people from associations and includes contracting officers from across the government. Department of Defense is chairing it, actually, a representative from Department of Defense. When those recommendations start rolling, those will be major issues for us to deal with, unless, of course, they say leave things as they are, in which case it won't be too earth-shaking. But it would reaffirm that what we have in place is the best way to go. That is a key element in our ability to continue to – that's our premier vehicle. You know, that's two-thirds of our $60 billion a year. So we need to be sure those are best value. Those results, as I said, will be rolling out this fall. I think the role of every contracting organization in the government is strapped for people. And there's a continuing debate about how much you can do with in-house government employees versus hiring private sector to help with the contracting process. We think there's a role for the private sector in that contracting process, and we do use contractors to help us. They don't sign the contract. That's a government function. There's certain decisions they can't make. There are others, particularly in the Congress, who don't think that's a good idea at all. We were somehow to be barred from going down that route. We already have a problem with having enough contracting officers as it is. That would exacerbate that problem greatly. But it's an issue that's still out there. So that kind of leads me to the last issue, which is just the shortage of qualified contracting people and the people who are walking out the door. We've just got to find ways of bringing people in, getting them up to speed quickly, getting them the right training, presenting the contracting field as a desirable thing to do for a career, and developing that.
So, David, on that note, you've obviously had over three decades of a very successful career over at GSA. So what advice might you give someone who perhaps is out there considering a role within government and perhaps maybe even a role within the procurement community?
Well, you know, it's my feeling on that is changing. I came on board in the 1970s, and by the 1980s, it was a bad thing to be a federal employee. We were told time and again in the press and by the politicians that we were basically a bunch of bums who were sitting around with our feet up on the desk. And it got to the point that as my own children were growing up, they would say, well, what do you think, Dad? Do you think I should think about a government career? And I said, I don't think you should. I think, you know, you get no respect. People think we're loafing our way through life, and I'd go for something else. If I were advising them today, you know, I think the tide's turned a little bit. You look at some of the opinion surveys, and you can't base it all on opinion surveys, but you know, there are a lot of federal employees who are doing a great job, and work can't be beat for interest. So I would certainly be less vocal in my steering my kids away, and I might even steer them toward it, toward a career in public service. They've gravitated that way anyhow. To others, I really do think things have changed. The retirement system has changed. Your retirement system is portable. You can take it with you. I would say to anybody who has any inkling of an interest in public service, give it a shot. Your pension's going to be portable. You can, if you don't like it, you can go elsewhere. I will say that for young people particularly, there's nowhere you can go and get the level of responsibility and challenge that we offer at an early stage of a person's career. And it's the sky's the limit as far as you can do as much as you want to do. Matter of fact, our recruiting material at GSA say you can do that here because we have a job for just about everybody in GSA.
That's a wonderful perspective. Thank you. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Marty and I would like to thank you for the 36-plus years of service that you've given our country.
It's been a pleasure. And I will say, as far as working for GSA, it's a great place to work. Tremendous organization, very sharp people, very dedicated people. We have a very distinct mission that's measurable, that at the end of the day, you can look at what you've done and know that you've delivered great service and great price. And I would simply say to anybody who's interested in what GSA does, take a look at our website, gsa.gov. You can find out anything you want to about GSA there. Or if you're interested listening to this and interested beyond GSA and want to know about more about the federal government, visit a website developed by GSA. It's what Time Magazine has identified as one of 25 websites you cannot live without. It's called USA.gov. And anything you want to know about the federal government is right there.
That's great. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with David Bibb, Acting Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration. My co-host has been Marty Wagner, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.